Saturday, the 6th of July. Josie returns to the same spot where she'd bumped into Alex the week before, just outside the coffee shop from which she'd run in a state of certainty that she'd seen Roxy on the street. She buys a coffee and sits outside with it. It's a cool, cloudy day, the beginning of July, but it feels more like September, and the air carries the sad feeling of the end of summer, although it is still in its full stride. Josie knows that it wasn't Roxy she saw last week. She knows it with 99% of her soul. But there is still 1% that thinks, why not? Why wouldn't it be Roxy? Roxy had once existed in three dimensions. There is no reason why she shouldn't exist in three dimensions still, and no reason, furthermore, why those three dimensions should not be here on Salisbury Road, inches from where she sits. She sips her coffee and stares across the street, her eyes taking in the form and shape of every young woman who passes. The dog sees a standard poodle and starts yapping madly at it. "Shh," Josie whispers into his ear. "Shush now." She makes the coffee last as long as she can, and then she sighs and gets to her feet. She has not seen Roxy. The emptiness of this realization scoops out the base of her belly. But then relief quickly takes its place. It is nearly midday, and Alex's house looks still. It looks empty. Josie scans the street for Alex's car, but it isn't there. Emboldened, she walks up the front path and peers through the edges of the shutters. She sees a living room that she's never seen before. Alex always takes her straight through from the front door to the kitchen and into the garden. She sees the cloud cat curled on a chair. She peers through the window to the side of the milky blue door. There is a pile of mail on the stairs, shoes in a managed heap under a console table, a spiky flowering plant in a brass pot. She stares for a moment more, relishing the luxury of time, of not being rushed, of taking in details. A photo of the four of them on a beach in raincoats. Alex's hair is under a hat. Just one strand escaped, kicked across her forehead by the wind. Nathan looks ruddy and faintly ridiculous. Josie hears a car slowing on the street behind her and turns. It's not them. But the adrenaline rush reminds her that they could be back any minute, and she is loitering on their doorstep with no good reason to be there. She casts around desperately for something to take. Some shred of Alex to fill her up until they meet again. She lifts the lid of Alex's recycling box and sifts through it until she comes upon a glossy magazine called Living Etc. She flicks through it and sees that it is full of beautiful photographs of houses. She slides it into her shoulder bag and she heads home.
4 p.m. Alex? Yes? Alex calls back to Nathan, who is sitting at the kitchen table staring at his phone with a frown on his face. Isn't this your friend Josie? Alex stops what she's doing and takes a step towards Nathan. What? He turns the phone towards her. The Ring app. It showed movement at the front door at about midday when we were at my dad's, so I just looked at it. And it's her, isn't it? Alex draws up beside him and takes the phone from his hand. And yes, it is. Clearly. It's Josie, staring first through their shutters into the living room and then through the small side window in the hallway. Her face looms in and out of shot of the camera. At one point, Josie turns slightly and the dog's face comes right into focus, his funny bug eyes looking even buggier. She must have dropped by, on the off chance, she says to Nathan. But look, he says, pointing at the screen. Look how long she's standing there for, staring through the window. I mean, what the fuck is she doing? Alex continues watching the footage, and the seconds pass by slowly, and still there is no obvious explanation for what Josie is doing outside her house.
"But this," says Nathan, "this is the weirdest thing. Look what she does next."
Alex watches, but can't make sense of what she's seen. "Wait," she says. "Rewind that bit." Nathan rewinds, and she watches again, and yes, there it is. Josie opening the lid of their recycling box and taking out a magazine, stuffing it in her handbag and then leaving very, very quickly. "Oh my God," she says breathlessly. "Oh my God." 7 p.m.
Alex sits next to Nathan in the back of an Uber that evening on their way to a friend's birthday dinner in Acton. She wants to talk to him about Josie, but also she doesn't want his opinion to cloud her view of how to handle things. Her project feels simultaneously thrilling and terrifying. She has opened a physical and metaphorical door to this woman, a pure stranger. She has brought her into her home, made her feel that she is somehow party to Alex's inner life. She takes full responsibility for the decisions she has made to this point, and now she needs to decide if she is prepared to take full responsibility for anything untoward that may happen to her or her family as a result. If she discusses this with Nathan, she knows what he will say. He will say, "Bin it. Tell her it's off. Get rid." And then if she ignores him and this project turns out to be a disaster, he will tell her that he told her. He will tell her that she was wrong and he was right. And Alex does not want to make professional or personal decisions based on what her husband will think if she makes a mistake. Because if she is right and he is wrong, this podcast could be the making of Alex's professional career. She watches Nathan that night over the dinner table. The friends are his friends. Giovanni is Nathan's best friend from college. His partner is Natalie, who Alex knows only in relation to Giovanni. When Nathan is with his friends, he is bombastic. He is high octane. He engages every element of his being in the act of producing the sort of persona that his friends expect from him. And in order to tap into these elements, he drinks twice as fast as he does when he's with Alex's friends or with his family. She feels a sense of unease pass through her as she sees Giovanni head to the cocktail cabinet for a second bottle of vodka. The careless, loose-wristed glugging into guests' glasses, the glaze across Nathan's eyes, the loudness of him, the babble of bullshit, the overloud laugh. And she knows already that this will be one of those nights. And she doesn't want to be that wife, the purse-lipped, stick-up-the-butt wife, the wife who can't relax and can't have fun and spoils it for everyone else. She wants to down tequila shots and sing and dance and laugh like a drain. But she can't take on that role because Nathan has already staked his claim on it. And one of them has to remain sentient and together. One of them has to be the grown-up. At 11 o'clock, she whispers into Nathan's ear, "We need to get back for the babysitter." But even as she does so, she knows that he isn't really listening and that even if he was, he has no intention of heading home. That he has entered the stage of inebriation where time has no meaning, when consequences have no meaning. And so she calls herself an Uber and she leaves. In bed, an hour later, she looks at her phone. Emboldened by drink, she types a message to Josie. "Hey, Josie, we saw you at the house earlier on our doorbell camera. Is everything all right?" The ticks turn blue immediately, and Josie is typing. "Everything's fine. I was just passing. I thought I'd say hello. Sorry to worry you." Alex stares at the message for a moment. There is more to it than her innocuous reply would suggest. But it is late. And if there is more to Josie's peculiar behaviour at her front door earlier today than she is letting on,
then maybe it is a topic of conversation better kept for their next face-to-face meeting. No problem, she replies. Sleep tight. You too, Alex, replies Josie, followed by a sleeping emoji and a love heart. Alex turns off her phone and picks up her book, waits for sleep to take her away from the weird swirling sensations of alcohol-induced paranoia, edginess, and very slight dread.
Midnight. Josie switches off her screen and puts down her phone. She picks up the magazine that she'd been studying before Alex's message came through and returns to the article she'd been reading about a lakeside house near Cape Town lived in by a handsome architect, his beautiful mermaid-haired wife, and a dog called Rafe with dreadlocked fur. Also to hand, she has a notepad in which she is writing down the things in the magazine that she would like to buy. Her grandmother left her £3,000 in her will in May. She also has about £6,000 in savings built up over the years, because she barely spends the money she earns as they mostly live on Walter's pension. She could afford the lamp with a base in the shape of an owl, or the blue rug with textured stripes that look like ripples on the surface of the sea. She could afford a velvet bed throw the colour of overripe raspberries, and the huge silky cushions printed with abstract streaks of ink blue and clotted cream. She could afford other things as well, but she doesn't want to go crazy. She glances across at Walter's side of the bed. He is not there. She swallows back the dark feeling this gives her and turns her attention to the magazine. As she flicks through it, something falls out from between the pages. It's a paper receipt. It's dated the 8th of June. Her birthday. Alex's birthday. It's from Planet Organic, 10:48 a.m. Sunflower oil, sourdough olive loaf, Alpro chocolate milk, Oatly milk, organic Pinot Grigio, a 200-gram pat of unsalted butter for £3.99. This suggestion of what Alex had been doing in the hours before they first met seems strangely magical, weighted down with some essence of fortune, of posterity. She holds it to her mouth and kisses it, then slides it back inside the pages of the magazine.
Monday, 8th of July. So, says Alex, smiling at Josie across the desk in her studio. Denim. Are you happy to talk about that today? Yes, sure. So I've noticed that most things you wear are made of denim, and I'm curious about that. For example, today you're wearing a denim skirt with a pale blue top and denim plimsolls. Your handbag is made of denim, and your dog is in a denim dog carrier. Do you have a story or a theory about your love of denim? Yes. I wasn't sure at first when he mentioned it last week. I wasn't sure what the reason was. I think I always just thought I liked it because it's practical, you know, easy. But you're right. A denim jacket is one thing. Everyone has a denim jacket, but denim accessories are another thing completely. And, you know, in my bedroom, I actually have denim curtains. So clearly there's something going on. And I think it's got something to do with the early days of my relationship with Walter, you know? I was wearing a denim jacket the first time I went out with him. I wore it a lot during the first couple of years we were together, and it became, for me, almost part of our love affair. Always there, on the back of a chair, or hanging off my shoulders. He'd put it there for me if the sun went in and I got cold, just put it there, like I was a princess or something. And then one day he picked it up and cuddled it and sniffed it and said something really cheesy like, "This jacket is you, it's just you." Something to do with my essence being inside it, something to do with the smell. And he made the jacket sound so powerful and important, and it made me feel like the jacket was maybe lucky in some way. Had brought us together. I don't know, it all sounds so stupid when I try to explain it. But after that, I think I always made sure I was wearing something denim so that maybe the way Walter felt about me then might last forever. Alex leaves the stunned moment of silence, and her mind fills with the image of the old man in the window of Joseph's flat.
I believe you brought some photos along today of you and Walter when you were both younger. Shall we have a look at those now?
Josie nods and pulls an envelope from her shoulder bag. There aren't many, she says. Of course, this was pre-smartphones, so we only took photographs with cameras, and obviously back then, well, we were kind of still a secret, so we weren't exactly snapping each other here, there and everywhere. But I found a couple. Here.
She passes them across the desk to Alex. Alex looks at one and then the other. Her eyes widen.
Wow, she says. Then she laughs, dryly, and gazes at Josie.
Wow. Walter was quite a hunk.
She sees Josie flush pink.
He really was, she says.
Alex looks again, studying the two photos more carefully. In one, Josie wears a denim jacket and baggy jeans. Her chestnut hair is mid-length and clipped back on one side. She appears to be wearing lipstick. She stands a foot away from Walter, who is beaming down at her from his elevated height, wearing a hoodie and jeans and a baseball cap. In the other, Josie sits on his lap, her hair in a ponytail, her head resting back against his chest, smiling widely into the camera, which is being held aloft by Walter. His hair is thick and shiny. His skin is clear and smooth. He looks young for his age. More early 30s than early 40s. His forearms are big and strong. His eyes are madly blue. Alex feels a sick swoop in her stomach as she acknowledges that if she were to bump into 40-something-year-old Walter today, she would be attracted to him. And she gets it. She gets it. And the fact that she gets it sickens her. Because Josie was a child, and he was a grown man. And he may not have looked like a paedophile then, but he looks like one now. And whether he looks like one or not, he was. And he is. You look so young, she says, handing the photos back to Josie. So very young. Well, she replies, I was. I was young. I was. It's crazy when you think about it. So if you could go back to 13-year-old Josie, just before she met Walter, what would you say to her? She watches Josie's face. She sees it fall slightly before lifting again, almost with an effort. I don't know, she says, her voice tight with emotion. I really don't know, because in some ways, being with Walter all these years has been the making of me, you know? Having the babies young, having something solid in my life, having something real when other girls my age were running around being fake and ridiculous, searching for things. But on the other hand, Josie looks up at her with glassy eyes. On the other hand, I wonder quite a lot, especially now that the girls are grown, especially now I'm middle-aged and Walter is getting old and... Josie pauses and sighs. Then she looks straight at Alex. Something sharp and clear suddenly shining from her nearly black eyes, and she says, I wonder what it was all for, you know? I wonder what else might have been. And actually, all things considered, I'd probably tell 13-year-old me to run for the hills and not look back. 11 a.m. What's your cat called? Asked Josie as they pass back through the kitchen an hour later. Sky.
Sky, that's a beautiful name. You still looking for a puppy?
Not really. Seems a lot right now, you know. I have other issues that seem more pressing than house training and sleepless nights.
What sorts of issues?
Oh, just... Alex pauses and gazes at the floor for a moment. She hasn't told anyone about Nathan's recent behaviour, not even her sisters. They would judge him. And they would judge her for putting up with him. They would tell her to fix it, to deal with it, to do something. She thinks of all that Josie has shared with her these past few days and finds herself saying, Nathan, you know, he's amazing. Obviously, he's amazing. But he has a drink problem. She sees Josie flinch. Like, not all the time. Most of the time he's fine, but when he's not fine, he's really not fine. He goes on benders. Doesn't come home. Benders. Sounds like such an old-fashioned word. It must surely have been superseded by now by something more modern. But it's the only word Alex can find to explain what her husband does. What he did on Saturday after Giovanni's dinner party. What it now seems he will keep doing from here on in unless she starts issuing ultimatums and threats. Josie sucks in her breath.
Oh, she says, that's not good.
No, says Alex, no, it's not good. Does he cheat on you when he stays out all night? Alex starts at the question. God, no, nothing like that, no. I don't think he'd be capable of doing anything like that, even if he wanted to, which he wouldn't, because it's not his style. But even as she says the words, an image flashes through her mind. Her reflection in the bathroom mirror on the night of her birthday party. Nathan's arms around her waist, his smile buried into her neck, her brusque rejection. Are you actually mad? And his subsequent disappearance into the petrol-dark Soho night. She shakes the image from her mind. Josie stares at her intensely. What are you going to do about it? She says. Alex sighs. I have no idea. He used to do it a lot before the children were born, and I did have my concerns back then, did wonder if he was going to be the right father for my children. But then Eliza arrived, and he changed overnight. I thought that was that, you know? But then, a couple of years ago, it started up again. It feels almost as if he thinks that we've got to the end of the intense bit of parenting, that we're on the home run, that he's, well, free again. Both women fall silent. Then Josie sighs and says, men. And there it is. The point which it all boils down to eventually. The point where there are no words, no theories. No explanations for behaviours that baffle and infuriate and hurt. Just that. Men. Alex, says Josie. I've been thinking about the denim. It's weird. I know it's weird. It's like I've been holding on to something for so long and there's no meaning to it anymore. Walter doesn't feel that way about me anymore. He hasn't for a long time. Walter barely sees me, you know. So what's it for? And I have a little money, an inheritance, and I want to, I suppose, refresh my life. My clothes, the flat. And I hope this doesn't sound strange, but you, she waves her hand towards Alex, you always look so nice, and I wondered if maybe you might want to go shopping one day. Help me. Alex blinks at Josie, and then she smiles. Of course, she says, I'd love to. She glances at the time on the clock above the hob. It's not even midday. Do you know the boutique on the corner, the cart? Yes, I think so. It's on your route home. We could go in there now, maybe? Josie glances at the time too. Okay, she says. Sure.
Midday. Josie has walked past this boutique 100 times and never set foot inside the door. Not for her.
She'd imagined the clothes inside to cost hundreds of pounds, the sales assistants to be snooty and rude, the other customers to be entitled and sour. But as she pulls the price tag on a black jersey dress closer to inspect it, she sees that it is only £39.99. And then a young girl appears at her side and makes baby noises at the dog and says, "Oh my God, so cute! What's her name?" "Oh," says Josie, "him. He's a him. He's called Fred." "Fred! Oh my God, cute name. Sophie, look!" She beckons over her colleague, another very young girl, who coos and clucks and says, "How old is he?" "He's 1.5. "Oh my God, he's a baby." Josie wills Fred not to growl or snarl at the girls, and he doesn't. "Did you want to try that on?" the girl called Sophie asks.
Yes, sure."
"I'll just hang it in the changing room for you. Let me know if you need any help." "Here," says Alex, heading towards Josie with a handful of summer dresses, some knitwear, a blazer-style jacket in red. "Try these on too." Josie hands Fred to Alex and heads into the changing cubicle. She tries on the black jersey dress first, the one she'd chosen. It hangs loose and shapeless on her, and she immediately takes it off and puts it back on its hanger. Then she tries on one of the dresses that Alex chose for her, soft floral jersey with a V-neck fitted to the knee, and she checks the price tag and sees that it is £49.99 and that she can afford it, and then feels a shiver of excitement because the dress is exquisite. And because it makes her look pretty and shapely and young, and because it is not made of hard-wearing denim, but of a soft, silky fabric that feels beautiful to the touch. And she takes it off and then tries on another and another, and all of them make her look like a woman she has never met before and would like to know better. And she takes all three dresses, both pieces of knitwear and the red cotton blazer, to the till, and watches in breathless awe as all six items are rung through by one assistant while the other assistant wraps them in tissue, and the total is £398.87, and that is more than Josie has ever spent in one go on anything ever in her life. But the atmosphere feels celebratory somehow, as if Alex and the sales assistants are all cheering her on, as if the purchase is an achievement of some kind, a reward, an award, a prize for good behaviour. She tries to hold on to that feeling as she says goodbye to Alex outside the boutique, lets Alex bring her in for one of the hugs that come so easily to her but that still feels so strange to Josie. Tries to hold on to it as she walks the 10 minutes from the boutique to her flat. Tries to hold on to it as she enters the flat, sees Walter's eyes turned towards her questioningly, smells the stench from Erin's room even from here, sees the faces of the people on the bus at the stop outside staring numbly through her grimy windows, wondering about the people who live in here, and never, she is sure, coming even halfway close to the reality of it. She takes the bag straight into the bedroom and hangs the dresses in her wardrobe, puts the tissue-wrapped knitwear in a drawer, and then from the inside pocket of her handbag, she takes the bracelet she'd seen sitting on Alex's console table by the front door. She holds it in the palm of her hand and stares at it. It's gold with tiny little diamond droplets, like a little puddle of glitter. She puts it to her lips and kisses it before putting it in the back of her underwear drawer. Then she goes to Pinterest, to the page she started a few days ago for inspirational quotes about being single. She thinks of Alex's husband disappearing for hours and days, leaving his beautiful wife alone at home, scared and angry and unhappy. Josie recognises that Alex has shown some vulnerability in sharing this with her and thinks that maybe Alex needs this today, needs to know she has options.
Josie scrolls through the memes, chooses one and WhatsApps it to Alex. A weak man can't love a strong woman. He won't know what to do with her. Underneath the image, she types in a row of love heart emojis, interspersed with strong arm emojis. She presses send.
Tuesday, 9th of July. Alex looks at the image on the screen of her phone that Josie sent her yesterday. A black square with the words, "A weak man can't love a strong woman. He won't know what to do with her," in white capitals. Underneath are some emojis, and for a few seconds, Alex squints at it, trying to work out what it means and why Josie has sent it to her. And then she realizes that Josie is using memes and quotes to bolster her resolve to change her life. So she types in a thumbs up emoji and presses send. Then she carries on getting ready to leave the house with the kids. "Nathan, have you seen my bracelet? The one you bought me for my birthday?" She hears his disembodied voice coming from somewhere else in the house.
"No. Wasn't it by the front door?"
"Yes, that's what I thought." She opens the drawers and goes through them again. She calls out to Eliza, who also has no idea where it is. Alex sighs and closes the drawers. She'll look again later. Now she needs to get the kids to school. Josie is wearing one of the dresses she bought at the boutique yesterday when she arrives at Alex's door at 9:30. She looks almost like a completely different person, and there's a second of dissonance before Alex smiles and says, "Josie, hi. I didn't think we'd... didn't we? Not that I..." Alex scrolls through her mental diary and fails to find the moment that they agreed to do another interview today. "Not that I remember, but that's okay. I'm not busy. Come in." "You look great, by the way." "Thank you." Walter nearly had a coronary. "What did he say?" "Oh, Walter doesn't say much. Man, a few words. Asked how much it cost. Obviously, first thing they all ask, isn't it?" Alex laughs. Nathan never asks her how much things cost. "So true," she says. "But yes, I think he liked it. But the important thing is that I like it, isn't it?" There's a brittle note of uncertainty in her tone, and Alex recognises the need to bolster her. "Absolutely," she says. "That is absolutely right. Come through." "No, Nathan?" Josie asks, peering into the living room as they pass. "No, like I say, he rarely works from home." "And all okay, you know, with what you were telling me about yesterday?" Alex blanches. She's beginning to wish she'd never said anything to Josie. "I guess," she says. "I mean, we haven't really talked about it. It's really shitty, you know, that sort of thing. You deserve better. That's what we both need to start to understand. We're 45, Alex. We can do better. We have to do better." Josie's words sting slightly. Alex knows that she deserves better than being abandoned by a husband twice a week while he gallivants around spending money on tequila shots and hotel rooms, that she deserves her messages to be replied to, her calls answered, a proper explanation for the absence of her husband for 12 straight hours. She knows it, but somehow the pendulum of pros versus cons keeps swinging back to the pros. "Do you love him?" Alex spins round to face Josie. "Nathan, do you love him?" "Oh," she says. "Well, yes. Yes, of course I do. Because, you know, lately I've been thinking a lot about love, about what it is, what it's for, and I feel like maybe I have no idea. That I've got to 45 years of age and I really don't know. And people talk about it all the time like it's, you know, something real, something you can touch. Like, when we talk about love, we're all talking about the same thing. But we're not, are we? It isn't a real thing. It isn't anything. And sometimes I make myself imagine what it would be like if Walter died, to see if maybe that will make me know if I love him or not. And I really do think if he died, everything would be better. And surely, if that's the way I feel, then I don't really love him, do I? Alex says nothing. And I have to wonder then what it was all for at the end of the day. All the smallness of everything, all the quietness. And you don't know yet, Alex. You're still in the middle of it all. Your kids, they still need you. But after they've gone, then what? Will you still want this? Everything you've built? Will you still want Nathan? Alex puts her hand to her throat and clasps her bumblebee pendant. I really don't know, she says. I used to think that I couldn't live without him, but recently, with all the, you know, the benders, I do sometimes wonder if life would be easier on my own. But when you think about Nathan dying, how does it make you feel? Really, inside, does it make you feel sad? Or does it make you feel free? Alex looks inside herself for something true to give to Josie. She pictures Nathan dead, the children fatherless, her future alone, and she says, no, it doesn't make me feel free. It makes me feel sad. There's a harsh silence, and Alex can feel judgment in it. Josie stares at her dispassionately. Ah, she says, and the atmosphere chills by a degree. Anyway, she says coolly, if you're busy, I'll let you get on. No, says Alex, feeling strangely as if she needs to win back Josie's approval. It's fine, I don't have anything on right now. We can do another session if you want. Josie's demeanour softens and she smiles. Sure, she says, okay. Alex leads her to her studio.
This is a recording from Alex Summers' podcast from the 9th of July, 2019.
We told my mother on my 18th birthday. Told her we were engaged. Told her we were going to get married. Told her I was moving out. Walter was there. He said there was no way he'd let me do something like that unsupported. And I genuinely had no idea how my mother was going to react. No idea if she'd laugh or cry or scream or call the police. But she just sighed. She said to me, you're an adult now, I can't make your choices for you. But Josie, I don't like this. I don't like it at all. And then she took hold of my face, like this, inside her hand, so hard it almost hurt, and she stared hard into my eyes and said, remember, you have choices. Then she let go of my face and left the room, slammed the door behind her. Me and Walter just looked at each other. Then he took me out for dinner to an Italian restaurant on West End Lane. Went back to his after and never went home. My life had actually begun. Or at least that's what I told myself. That's what I believed. It's only now that I can see how wrong I was. That I was just handing myself from the hands of one controlling person to another.
Tim and Angel Hiddingfold Clark are the current owners of Josie's dog, Fred.
Tell us how you and Fred got together.
This woman approached us a couple of years ago. We were on honeymoon in the Lake District, summer 2019, eating lunch on a bench. And she just appeared in front of us. She looked kind of scared, haunted in a way. And it was hot, but she was wearing her hood up, dark sunglasses, a jacket done all the way up to her chin. She said, please, please, help me. I can't take care of my dog anymore. Please, will you take him to a rescue centre? Please, please help me. And then she just handed him to us in this, like, dog carrier thing and passed us a carrier bag with food in it. She said, he's lovely once he gets to know you. The loveliest, loveliest boy. And then she sort of kissed him and left. It was literally the weirdest, weirdest thing that had ever happened. And of course, we had no idea at the time who she was. No idea whatsoever. It was only a few days later that we saw that it was her. That it was Josie Fair.
But you kept the dog.
Oh my God, yes. Of course we did. I mean, look at him. Just look at him.
11 a.m. Josie sits outside the cafe where she once thought she'd seen Roxy. She has a cappuccino and the dog sits on her lap. Her hands shake slightly and her mind pulses and twitches with contradictory thoughts. She thinks of Alex's stupid-faced husband, with his mud-coloured eyes, leaving Alex and his children to go out drinking to the point of stupefaction. She thinks, at least Walter has never done that. She thinks, Walter has always been there for me and the children. But then she thinks, Walter is always, always there. Walter is never anywhere else. She would like it if Walter could be somewhere else. She would like it if she could be somewhere else. Forever. But then she thinks, what is my alternative? And she thinks, Alex. She thinks Alex is the answer to everything, somehow. But then Alex loves her stupid-faced, cheating husband, which makes Josie think that Alex is maybe every inch as stupid as she is. And Josie needs Alex to be cleverer than her. Josie's always needed people to be cleverer than her. And she doesn't know how she feels about Alex anymore. She also doesn't know how she feels about Walter. As her eyes scan the pavement for the daughter she hasn't seen for 5 years, her thoughts spiral back to the day Roxy disappeared and the reason why she left, and she feels a nauseating darkness envelop her. And as it begins to smother her, her breathing grows laboured and panicky, and she knocks her coffee cup as her hand goes to the pocket of her jacket and she pulls out the teaspoon that had rested on the side of her coffee cup in Alex's studio. She caresses it gently and slowly brings her breathing back to normal. She checks around her to see if anyone is looking her way, and when she is sure they are not, she puts the teaspoon to her lips and kisses it. She gets home an hour later. Walter turns and smiles at her from the table in the window. Never see you anymore, he says. Don't be silly, of course you do. What's going on with you and this school, Mum? Nothing, we're just getting to know each other. Where do you go? Here and there, cafes, her house, the park. What's her name? Alex. Alex? Isn't that the name of the woman when we were at that pub on your birthday?
Yes.
Is it her?
Yes.
She sees Walter's face crumple with confusion. Why didn't you say?
I don't know. I thought you might think it was weird.
Walter's right eyebrow lifts slightly and he turns back to his laptop with a sigh. Like I'd ever think you were weird, he says dryly. Josie's wiring is all off after talking to Alex. Instead of ignoring Walter as she normally would, she feels the nauseating darkness fall upon her again and she folds her arms across her chest and says,
What is that supposed to mean?
Oh, nothing, love, nothing, obviously.
No, Walter. Seriously? What is that supposed to mean? Just say it.
Walter slowly removes his reading glasses and rubs away the sweat at the bridge of his nose. Then he turns to her and says, Josie, leave it.
I'm not going to leave it, Walter. If you've got something to say, then say it.
No. I'm not doing this, Josie. I'm not going there.
Suddenly, she finds herself striding across the room, propelled by pure adrenaline. She stops a foot from Walter and breathes in hard and then slaps him, ringingly, hideously hard, across his face.
I fucking hate you!
She screams.
I fucking hate you!
She stops, recoiling slightly in the wake of her own violence. Walter blinks at her, touches the side of his face with his fingertips. Then he slowly returns his glasses to his face and turns back to his computer.
2:30 PM.
Alex, isn't it?
Alex turns to locate the source of the greeting. It takes a second for her to recognise Josie's mother, Pat O'Neill, and then she says, "Oh, Pat, hello." Alex is on Kilburn High Road, on her way to the bank to pay in the cheque that her great aunt sends on her birthday every single year. It's for £25, and she's been putting it off for too long, risking causing offence to her great aunt, who will be watching her bank account to see the money being cashed, and if it isn't, will send a message to her via her mother to check that it hasn't got lost in the post. Pat is wearing an apple green linen shirt with skinny jeans and strappy sandals. She looks vibrant and glamorous. Her aura is busy and important. How are you?
I'm great, Pat replies.
Just getting some paperwork sorted for one of my ladies on the estate, Sally. She's nearly 90. Still thinks she can do everything, bless her. How are you?
Oh, yes, fine. Just heading to the bank.
Seen Josie lately?
Yes, saw her earlier today, in fact.
So this podcast thing is still happening?
Yes, it is.
Alex pauses. She feels the need to dig just a little. What do you think about it?
Well, I think it's weird, to be honest. If you didn't seem so completely normal, I'd be wondering about what your motivation was. As it is, I can tell you straight up. I googled you and I saw your credentials, you're proper. But this birthday twin thing, I still don't really get it.
Alex cocks her head to one side and glances upwards briefly. Yes, she says, it's not really so much about that now, it's evolving into something else. Something that's more about being women at a very particular age, on the cusp of menopause. Not young, but not quite old. Questioning your choices, wondering about our paths, our futures, looking at the similarities between us, but also, she pauses, choosing her next words carefully. Well, Josie, she's very different to me too.
That's for sure.
Pat's mouth purses at the end of her sentence. You're polar opposites. You're the sort of woman I'd always assumed a daughter of mine would be. You know, grit and talent, and get up and go.
Alex ignores the slight against Josie and says, what do you think of Walter?
She's told you, has she? How they met?
Alex nods. Pat eyes her disparagingly. Well then, what do you think I think about Walter? 45-year-old man hooking up with an 18-year-old girl. Disgusting. God knows how long it had been going on before they told me about it.
Have you met him?
No. Just seen him from a distance. Is he controlling?
Pat considers the question for a moment and then says, they're both as bad as each other, if you ask me. They're what you call a toxic combination, and those poor girls.
Yes, tell me about the girls. Josie doesn't mention them much, just that one still lives at home and the other left home when she was 16. I couldn't help feeling that there was more she wasn't telling me.
Alex sees immediately that she has crossed a line. Pat's face closes down and she takes a step back.
Probably best you talk to Josie about that sort of thing, she says.
Not my place to say. But listen, good luck with it all. You're going to need it.
Then she hitches her bag up onto her shoulder, musters a weak smile, turns and walks away.
Alex messages Josie when she gets home. I think it is really important that I meet Walter and talk to him about his side of the story. Would he be open to the idea of coming to the studio? Or I could even come to yours and talk to him at home. Let me know what you think. A reply arrives a few seconds later. I'm not sure Walter would want to do that. He's very private. Alex stares at the message for a moment. Then she types a reply. Does Walter know about this project? Sort of. He knows I'm talking to you. Okay, well, I do think I really need to talk to him. It could be off the record, if he'd prefer. How do you think we could persuade him? There's a short delay then, before Alex sees that Josie is typing a reply. She stares at her screen, waiting for the message to appear. If it was social, he'd probably come. As long as your husband was there. Maybe dinner. Wednesday, 10th of July. I was thinking of inviting Josie and her husband over for dinner this weekend for my project. Alex has been gathering the nerve to make this pronouncement for over an hour since she and Nathan woke up this morning. She'd been awake half the night, oscillating between feeling utterly convinced that it was a perfectly good idea and just another way of doing her job, and feeling utterly convinced that it was the worst idea she'd ever had. Right up until 10 seconds ago, she'd still been uncertain which way she was going to go. But the words are out now, and she bites her lip as she waits for his response. Jesus Christ. I know, she says. I know, it'll be weird as fuck. But I really think it's going to move this project along. But do I have to be there? Yes, I think you do. Sounds like he's a man's man. I don't think he'd want to hang out with only two women. And I could just interview him, but I get the feeling I'd get more out of him in a social setting. With alcohol, you know? She throws Nathan a pleading look and his face softens. Sure, he says. Anything for you, my love. He says this with sarcasm, but also, Alex knows, with a touch of sincerity. An awareness of how much he currently owes her. Alex exhales with relief. Thank you, she says, then picks up her phone and texts the invitation to Josie.
8:30 a.m. Josie glances at her phone and, seeing Alex's name, snatches it up from the kitchen counter. How about you and Walter come to my place for dinner on Friday night? Let me know. And see you tomorrow for another session? Josie stills. Her gaze flicks across the room to Walter, sitting on the sofa, watching BBC Breakfast and eating toast in his dressing gown. She returns her gaze to the message again and then lets it percolate for a while, as she waits for her toast to cook. Occasionally, her eyes go back to Walter, to the thatch of wiry white hair on the back of his neck that grows horizontally, to his fluffy earlobes and patchy stubble. Walter, she says, you need to go to the barber's.
I know, he says. I was going to go on Saturday.
We've been invited for dinner on Friday. At Alex's house, you need to go before Friday. He turns briskly and narrows his eyes at her.
What?
Dinner. At Alex's. We're going, okay?
The woman with the same birthday as you. The woman you've been seeing so much of.
Yes.
Why the hell does she want to have us for dinner?
I told you we're friends. That's what friends do.
Where does she live?
One of those roads that runs between the park and Salisbury Road. His left eyebrow shoots up.
Bloody hell.
Seriously, Walter, this is important. You need a new outfit too. I can't take you in any of your clothes. When was the last time you bought anything new? Eh? The atmosphere in the flat shifts into a new realm with every word that she utters. It's like she's smashing a fist through a sequence of invisible walls, with each one getting closer and closer to something approaching the truth of everything.
Walter puts up his hands into a gesture of surrender.
Jesus Christ, Jojo, chill out. I'll sort it, okay?
Hair? Clothes?
Yes. Hair, clothes. Jeez.
He turns off the television and brings his plate through to the kitchen. He has a smell about him. Probably his dressing gown needing a wash. Also stale stubble and morning breath. The smell of decay. Of defeat. It sits at the back of her throat and makes her feel enraged.
I don't know what's got into you lately, Jojo, he says as he heads towards the bathroom for his morning shower. I really don't.
At work that afternoon, Josie feeds the hem of a dress through the overlocker, her hands moving mechanically while her brain whirls and weaves chaotically through the new universe of things she thinks about these days. She's obsessively planning an outfit for Friday, whilst anxiously picturing Walter in a rotating range of clothes that don't suit him. Inside her head, there plays a grainy movie of all of them sitting around the table in Alex's kitchen with the mismatched chairs, the red-haired children running about in colourful pyjamas, wine being poured into huge glasses by the annoying red-haired husband, cool music through a speaker, the cloud cat curling around their ankles, the light dying in the sky as the conversation flows. And then her spiralling thoughts bring her back to Walter and his old man teeth, his irritating monotone, his defeated air. And she is 14 again, 16. 18, a young mum spending her husband's money frugally in Sainsbury's, a middle-aged woman in a quiet flat, and in every incarnation, she is the same person, a girl in stasis. And now, just as she'd hoped would happen when she first thought about asking Alex to make her the subject of a podcast, someone else is breaking through her carapace. Another person entirely. And that person is bigger than her, louder than her, harsher than her, older than her. That person is ready, finally, to tell her truth. She cuts the ends of the thread from the overlocking machine and turns the dress over, ready to hem the other side. A tube rumbles along the tracks beyond the big window and Josie sees her face as a blurred reflection in the glass. She looks like a half-finished painting, she observes, waiting for the artist to come back and add the detail. Her phone buzzes with a message from Alex. She experiences the endorphin rush she always gets when she sees Alex's name on her phone, the sense that something good is happening to her. Can you bring a photo tomorrow of the girls? Would love to see what they look like. See you then. A chill goes through Josie. The girls. How can she talk to Alex about the girls? She asks herself. But then she looks again at the blurred version of herself in the big window, and suddenly she sees that the half-finished portrait is that of a queenly woman. Not a gauche girl. And she knows that finally, after all these years, it is time to hold her life up to the light.